You are listening to the Tricorder Transmissions Special.
Episode
30.
And
now,
here are
Craig
and
Jeff.
That was 5-Year Mission playing the Reading Rainbow theme song live from the dessert party in Star Trek Las Vegas to lead us in.
Hey everybody, we're picking up from last week's coverage of our 2014 Star Trek Vegas convention visit. So last week we covered Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. This week we are going to cover the busy Saturday and Sunday convention schedule.
Yep. That is correct. And one difference is going to be that everything you hear this week is going to be recorded after we left Las Vegas. We did not do any recording on site Saturday or Sunday. Things got so out of control that we didn't have time to stop and record.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. Now, I'll tell you, when I got back, I started to realize just how busy we got. I mean, we did so much promotion for the show and met so many great people over the course of the con. Things just completely got out of hand.
Yeah.
With our scheduling. And we, by the time we would get back to the room at night, we were so tired that we just couldn't record anything. We had to go straight to bed.
Yeah.
So on Saturday, the first thing we did, and this was a last-minute thing, by the way. Yeah. We did not plan to do this.
Yeah, this was, we have some extra money in our pockets. Why not?
And this was a Craig Cohen suggestion that I wholeheartedly agreed with. We opted for the Peter Weller photo.
Yeah, and he was there, of course, because he played Admiral Marcus in Star Trek Into Darkness, but it was really all about RoboCop for the two of us.
Absolutely, man. You know, now, not to take anything away from his role in Into Darkness, and I, if you've listened to our show before, you know that I'm fine with Into Darkness, and I did enjoy it, and I enjoyed the 2009. But for me, standing next to RoboCop was a bucket list item for me.
Yeah, and I got to say, out of all the three posed or pro photo ops we did, the Peter Weller one was the most interactive.
Absolutely. You know, so Nichelle Nichols that we met on Thursday was a wonderful woman, but,
yeah,
you know, you were instructed not to attempt to touch or hug her. You kind of had to stand on either side and take your photo. But and William Shatner, who we'll talk about later, was pretty much the same way. But Peter Weller was very accommodating, very happy, put his arms around us and took a great picture.
Yeah, it's a great pick, and I'm sure you're gonna drop those pictures in the show notes.
Absolutely.
And if you haven't seen them already, they've been up on Facebook for a while. So if you're not a member of our Facebook group yet, get on over there. It's facebook.com/the Tricorder Transmissions.
Yeah, absolutely. And all of our pictures from the convention are there currently. So back to Peter Weller, I think I was slightly tongue-tied. I think I got out, "Hi, Mr. Weller." That's pretty much what I got out.
Yeah, about the same for me, I think. It was funny because it was one of those things, like you said, it was so last minute, but when we went and did it, it was such a no-brainer knowing, you know, what big fans we are. I know for me, depending on what day of the week you catch me, RoboCop is in my somewhere in my top five favorite films of all time.
Yeah, well, that first RoboCop movie, for I'm in the same boat as you. It's one of my favorite films on so many different levels, and I don't know if we want to necessarily dig into RoboCop here on our Star Trek show, but I'm sure that at some point, if you engage us on Facebook or our own forums, you'll be able to get our opinions and why we love RoboCop so much, especially the first film.
Yeah.
So that was, for me, that was a really good bucket list item. I don't know about you, Craig, but that was a crowning achievement.
Oh, totally. For me. Totally. And it was, like I said, the fact that there was such a last minute nature to it really, really made it cool.
Yeah. When you suggested that, it kind of out of nowhere, and I kind of perked up. I was like, oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. So we were very, very, very happy to finally get to stand next to Peter Weller. And please go look at the picture, because I think it came out great and he looks good in it, and we're both really happy in it.
Yeah, I got to say all the pro photos came out really good. That's always a concern, because it's a picture that's being taken that you don't even get to see until you go pick it up.
Right, so you don't really know how it's going to come out, and you kind of have to trust the photographer. Now, granted, there were times where we would see, while we were waiting in line, we would see the photographer call people back to take a second or third photo because the photos weren't coming out well. So it looks to me like Creation at least wants to give you a decent picture, and the photographer is told, listen, if the picture doesn't come out well, don't just let it go.
Yeah.
Call the people back so that they get their money's worth.
Yeah, and it was the same dude all 4 days.
That guy worked real hard.
Yeah. I could imagine his arm was pretty sore by the end of the weekend.
Thousands of pictures that guy must have taken.
Yeah. So we spent also some time on the vendor room floor all 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
But Saturday we probably did quite a few laps.
Yep.
And I know that I was really – we spent a lot of time hanging out at the five-year mission table because Savannah was working the table, Patrick's mm-hmm. wife. And we were keeping her company, and she was thrilled to have us.
She was knitting us tribbles.
Yeah, we love talking with her. She's really cool. And, you know, we were able to help, step aside when people came by to say hi or whatever. But while we were at the five-year mission table, I was thrilled – that Jordan Hoffman walked by, who was doing some of the secondary panels. He was doing One Trek Mind. He's a guy on Twitter that I follow, and he's a film critic. And it was so funny. He walked by, and I was like, Jordan! And he turned around, and then I realized that he didn't know me.
That was funny, because you just follow him on Twitter. You'd never met him before.
Yeah, so it was cool. We were able to talk to him for a couple of minutes, and hopefully we'll be able to bring him on board at some point. He seemed like he would be open to talking Trek with us.
Yeah, he seemed pretty enthusiastic about coming on and chatting with us. And that was the first time I'd met him myself, or heard of him, actually. And he's a really cool guy.
Yeah. And I know one of the panels he was talking about was one they did Sunday morning, I believe, was they were going to determine the top 10 Star Trek jerks.
Yeah, what a great idea.
Yeah, and I know, I believe, Mudd ended up on the top of the list?
Or
close to the top of the list.
I thought Q1.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, Q1. But the interesting thing is they came up with Chris Pine's Kirk as number 10, which I thought was really interesting.
That is pretty interesting. I don't know if I would necessarily agree with that, because there's some people that didn't make the list. But apparently people are jaded enough by the JJ movies that Chris Pine gets voted in.
Yeah. Well, I think it also speaks to sort of the development that Kirk goes through in those two JJ movies.
I guess I've seen both of those movies a couple of times, and I don't, I agree that he was a bit on the selfish side. I didn't really feel like he came off as a jerk.
Yeah.
In the first one, I didn't get that impression. A little bit in the beginning of the second, but still, it felt like he was channeling the original Kirk to me.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if it was a legit jerk vote by by context or by anger or frustration or dissatisfaction with the JJ films.
Yeah, unfortunately we weren't in that panel because it was too early in the morning for us. But it sounds like it was neat. And it looks like there was a lot of great stuff going on in that secondary theater.
Oh, for sure.
But the main theater we found our way back into for two back-to-back panels.
Yeah.
They had the Voyager stars, Kate Mulgrew, who was Captain Janeway, Ethan Phillips, who was Neelix, and Tim Russ as Tuvok. And they did a pretty neat panel. They decided to show clips, which I thought didn't work too well. They showed a clip from Voyager, I guess, of Janeway doing some dramatic acting.
Yeah, there was very little setup for that. And I honestly, I've only seen maybe a 50 to 60% of the total Voyager episode. So I think I might have missed that one. So I wasn't exactly sure where that came from.
Yeah, I know I had missed it too. And then they decided to show a clip from Orange is the New Black, and they were streaming it directly off Netflix. So, of course, at the moment they decided to play the clip, it started up and then it lagged and the image was frozen and all you heard was the audio.
Yeah, it seemed like they had some internet issues going on there. And the funny thing was, this is not really Star Trek related, but I was pretty impressed with the level of Verizon LTE signal I had gotten throughout the entire convention inside the Rio. And I was expecting to have a really crappy phone connection, but I guess the Wi-Fi there must be bad.
Yeah, I that's what I think too, yeah. It's funny, anytime you go to one of these conventions, you expect the cell phone signal to be terrible.
Especially with so many people there, you would think that with so many people pounding that cell tower,
yeah.
I was expecting to be knocked down to 3G or 1X or have a really terrible connection. But I'll tell you, I was uploading pictures from the show floor with no lag at all.
Yeah, yeah.
So if anybody is concerned about that, don't be. Because, on Verizon is all I can speak to. I don't want to get too techie. If you're on another carrier, I don't know. But their Verizon was rock solid the entire podcast. And hopefully they kick us a couple bucks for saying that. I'm just kidding. We have no sponsors. But
yeah. So then that panel rolled right into Simon Pegg, who, of course, played Scotty in the new films. And
yes,
Simon Pegg is huge at the moment. He's, you know, he's a hot working actor. And the one thing I was disappointed with was he came out and he went right into Q&A.
Yeah. And, you know, nothing against people who want to profess their love for these characters and for these celebrities. Believe me, I would love to do the same thing. But when you're in the audience and you're sitting in a Q&A session, you want to hear questions and answers.
Yeah.
Right? And Simon Pegg's, and there were a few interesting bits in there. It seemed like a lot of people were asking about the Cornetto movies, which Craig and I mean, we both love those movies.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really necessarily what we had hoped to or expected to hear about at a Trek convention. And that's not to say that Simon Pegg was any less than great on stage, and I just was a little bit, I wanted to hear more about his experiences in the two Star Trek movies.
Yeah, yeah, and it seems like some of the questions found their way there, but the format just wasn't really as conducive to it. So it was kind of a shame, but it was still really, really cool to see Simon Pegg up on stage. And I know that was, you know, the guys in 5-Year Mission got to play him in with that Sisters of Mercy song, which really seemed to knock him out.
Yeah, that was another one of those great moments for the band, I think, when they showed that they had done their homework and they knew who they were playing for, and they played that person or group of people in with something that was appropriate.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So then I think the next thing we did, we had a little bit of a break that night before a really, really cool event happened, which was the Star Trek, the concert live with the Nevada Pops Orchestra, led by conductor and executive director and Star Trek fan Richard McGee. But then also they had Star Trek The Next Generation composer Ron Jones come up for a minute. And what this was, it was like 70 minutes of 50 years worth of Star Trek movie, starting as early as the Cage and ending or covering the most recent J.J. Abrams scores.
Right, so, the Giacchino stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, you got a really, really great sort of mixture of Trek music. And then Ron Jones had also composed a special piece of music called Pathway to the Stars just for this convention.
You know, I don't know if I've said this before on our show. Maybe I have, but maybe I haven't. I think that any opportunity to hear a live orchestra play today is an absolute treat, and it's something that I wish more people would get to experience because it's not as commonplace as it was in the past.
Yeah.
And being able to sit there and listen to, I mean, granted, it's Star Trek music and it's music that I love, but it, just being able to be in the presence of a large ensemble that's playing this wonderful orchestral music is something that I wish more people today could experience.
Agreed. And aside from the challenges they had with the mix, at one point I know the piano was really loud and it kind of threw off the song because in the real song, the music, you know, the piano is not that loud or whatever. But I agree 100%. I mean, it was pretty amazing to sit there and listen to. And on the side of the stage, they had screens and they were showing footage from the TV shows and the movies. And it was funny, at one point, the conductor didn't realize it was going on. And I guess he looked over and caught it and said he almost lost his place.
I can imagine that because the footage they were showing was supposed to line up with the pieces that they were performing. And somehow it got out of sync. Granted, you know, you're coming from doing pretty much Q&As and panel discussions all day to producing a musical performance, which is completely and utterly different when you're talking about syncing and a live mix going on of all the different sections of an orchestra. So, you know, it's quite understandable that snafus happened during that performance because it's not what they were doing the entire weekend. This was like a one-off thing.
So right after that, it spilled right into the Saturday Late Night Dessert, Cocktail, and Centerpiece Contest, which was basically the five-year mission contest. And this was reserved for captain's chair and gold level weekend pass holders.
Right, which we were not.
Yes, but five-year mission had a guest list.
Yep.
And they were gracious enough to put us on their list. So we were able to go in and experience and enjoy the late night dessert, cocktail, and centerpiece contest party and watch those guys play.
Let me tell you, seeing them play an hour set on a stage that was 5 feet in front of me was far and away a different experience than seeing them play on the stage, one song here, one song there. And I'm really glad that I got to see what was a real five-year mission show.
Yeah, and we got to eat some ice cream as well.
That was okay. But for me to be able to stand in front of those guys and actually get that full experience was a big, big highlight of the entire con for me. And yeah. I felt like I was seeing friends because we'd gotten to spend so much time with them prior to that show that I felt like I knew most of them by that time.
Oh, totally. Yeah, agreed.
The concert itself was really, really great. It was great to hear these songs live. And the guys are a truly talented bunch, you know, multi-instrumentalists and all of them can sing. And the rap number was hysterical.
Yeah, the Tribbles, the rap number from Tribbles from the Klingon perspective.
Yep. And really, really great to see them live. I really hope at some point in the future we can get to see them again.
Oh, totally. And one thing that was cool in their set, for the most part, their songs were synced up to footage from the episode they were singing about.
Yeah, and amazing, they pulled it off so well, and Creation had a hard time syncing up these video clips with the orchestra.
Yeah. So one of the coolest things, aside from seeing the band and eating ice cream, and also seeing a lot of the cool centerpieces, which I guess they gave away a Best Centerpiece Award to a guy who recreated, was it the device that Spock builds in The City on the Edge of Forever?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, exactly what that was. And for some reason, it took a long time for him to get up to the stage. I think his girlfriend or his wife came up for a good 10 minutes or so before this guy turned up.
Yeah, and then nobody really cared. I mean, not to take anything away from the work, the great work he did, but people are there socializing, have a good time, and some guy's getting up there who doesn't really have great mic etiquette in terms of how to use a mic, and he's trying to explain what he did, and it really wasn't the right environment for it, sadly.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think they should have done that prior to the band taking the stage.
Yeah, agreed. So in addition to all that cool stuff, something really, really cool happened. So we sort of doubled as roadies at the end of the night because the band had to move all their stuff back to the main theater and set up for the Sunday morning panel. So me and you are walking their guitars back to the main stage, and we're up on the main stage, and we put down the guitars, we lean them against the couch that was on stage, and we both look up and we see the holodeck doors that they had on stage. And we sort of just both looked at each other and raised an eyebrow.
And we could not resist the chance to take our pictures. Yeah,
so you grabbed your phone and we got some really excellent pictures. My Twitter picture right now is actually me standing in front of the holodeck doors, which just looks amazing. I can look back at that and say, wow, I was there on the bridge of the Enterprise coming out of the holodeck.
Yeah, and it's my Facebook profile picture now as well, me standing in front of the door. And that door is the door that every single celebrity panelist came through in that weekend. So we stood there in front of that door, and they're great, great pictures and great, great memories. And thank you again to 5-Year Mission for giving us the opportunity to stand in front of that door.
Totally. And I think we didn't talk about it. We teased it, but there were some other cool photo opportunities that Creation had set up that were completely free. Mm-hmm. When you first came out of the registration area, they had what I would call an exact replica of the Guardian from The City on the Edge of Forever.
It even talked.
It talked. It had actual voice recordings from the Guardian. And they had a dedicated security guard who would allow space in front of it for people to pose and take pictures. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, that was a great added value.
It absolutely was. And I hope that Creation doesn't listen to this and get any ideas. But we were remarking that if those objects were available for photo ops at a New Jersey convention, it would have been like a $5 charge.
And we would have paid it.
Absolutely would have. I mean, I can think back, you know, a couple, not even a year ago, we were at a convention here in Jersey, and a guy had, there was a Batmobile out front from the 60s Batman series, and it was $10 to take a picture with it.
Yeah.
Granted, they let you pose 3 or 4 or 5 different shots. I mean, one in the car, one at the front of the car, one at the back of the car, but it would still cost you money to take a picture with it.
Yeah.
Whereas Creation let you take pictures with the Guardian and the Transporter, which we're going to talk about, for free.
Yeah, they had an original series era Transporter. It was a 4 Transporter setup, and it looked great. If you framed your picture right, it would look like you were on the bridge of the Enterprise, ready to beam down or had just beamed back. Great thing to see, and I know it was right outside the main vendor room, so we walked by it a lot, and it was cool seeing all the different photos that were getting taken up there and all different configurations of people. You had Borgs up there and, you know, people in red shirts, gold shirts, and it was just really great to see. And one thing that I thought was interesting is this convention really showcased to me how big and diverse the fan community is within Star Trek. And what I mean by that is we're focused on the original series. Mm-hmm. We're an original series focused show. That's sort of our thing. I thought it was interesting that their 2 big photo opportunities were based around the original series, but their main stage setup was devoted to Next Gen. But all that aside, I got to say that there were people we met there that are bigger fans of one era than the other. You know, you had your Voyager people and your Next Gen people and your original series people and even your Enterprise people.
Mm-hmm.
And then even your like Wrath of Khan people.
Sure.
Yeah. So I that was kind of eye opening for me where, you know, we sort of just look at Star Trek the way we look at it, but it was cool to sort of see it through other fans' eyes and see what their Star Trek experience is.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I came away with the same impression that it doesn't matter what series or movie series is your favorite. Everybody at these Star Trek conventions is unified in a love of Trek. And you had people in costume, in full costume, from every single series and movie that there was throughout Trek from the 60s until today.
Yeah.
There were people in JJ Trek uniforms. There were people in original series uniforms. There are people in original series movie uniforms, retcon and motion picture uniforms. You had people in every series costumes, but everybody was there in a unified sense. Nobody was, you know, talking down to or dismissing people who liked a certain series over another. Everybody was unified in Trek. And for me, that was a completely new experience, you know, being a guy that goes to different types of conventions with all sorts of different movies and shows and fans introduced into the same area. This was like, if you liked any Trek, you're in.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll put this out there to anybody who's never been to, as a Trek fan, has never been to a convention before. The Vegas convention is the place to go, and you really should experience it at least one time because it's so inclusionary. And it's so inclusionary that I was actually surprised by how inclusive it was.
Yeah.
So I can't say enough good stuff about the fans who were there. And at no time would any Trek fan feel out of place amongst these people.
Oh, not at all. You know, it really is a place where you can go for 4 days and be surrounded by friends you've never met.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I'll tell you, you can seriously, if you're standing in line for an autograph or for a photo or in the vendor's room, you literally, you can turn and talk to the person behind you or the person in front of you, and you will immediately get into a conversation. It won't be, there will be no standoffishness. There'll be no dismissiveness. Everybody's a friend, even if you don't know them.
Yeah. And one encounter we had, this is sort of dovetails into this nicely, is we spoke with John and Ken from the Mission Log podcast, which was kind of something I was nervous about because Mission Log is the official Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
Yeah. I was a little, when I actually was not involved in the initial conversation. I don't know where I was, but I was not with you when you spoke to them the first time. And I remember walking into the vendor room and you were walking out to meet me. And you told me that you had just talked to them. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Wow, how did that go?
Yeah, and it was really neat because John and Ken turned out, and not that it wasn't expected, but they turned out to be really, really cool guys. Mm-hmm. And they were actually interested in all the different Star Trek podcasters that were there. And I know on Sunday they tried to, and I assume they successfully had a little lunch gathering for all of the podcasters that we weren't able to make because our schedule was so busy. But it was cool to see that even though they're the official Roddenberry Star Trek podcast, that it sort of speaks to the, you know, like you said, everybody's sort of part of it. It was very much the same feeling with all the podcasters we ran into as well.
Yeah, that's a really great point. I'm glad you brought that up because I was a little bit nervous because I know that there is a very competitive feeling sometimes amongst different podcasters. And I was really taken aback by the fact that we met several podcasters from all different podcasts, from several different Trek podcasts, and everybody was so inclusive. They were all very welcoming and not dismissive to what we were doing. And granted, there are so many Trek podcasts and everybody takes a slightly different approach to talking about Trek. And our approach is a little different than the Mission Log approach. But we were able to talk to them and have them be completely accepting of what we're doing.
And then it's funny, when we went back to talk to them another time, you and Ken realized that you had another sort of general interest, which was Apple products.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is that I have been a fan of a guy by the name of Leo Laporte, and I'm not going to go too deep into this, but I've been a fan of this guy, Leo Laporte, since the early 90s, early to mid 90s, and he was a tech journalist, a tech a host of different tech shows, and I've been listening to him, following him for a long, 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 long time. And he does, he has a whole network now of podcasts by, under the name of Twit, which is the Week in Tech. But he's got an entire network of professional podcasts. That's how he makes his living. And I listen to several of his regular podcasts, one of which is a podcast called Mac Break Weekly. It's all about Macintosh computers, Apple, and Apple products. And he has mentioned another show by the name of Mac OS Ken. And I did not know that that Mac OS Ken was involved in the mission log. So when we realized, when I realized that this was that guy, I had this oh my God moment of who I was talking to. And this is a guy that I've heard of many, many times on these Leo Laporte podcasts.
Very, very funny. Yeah. Awesome. Very cool guys. And I'm glad we were able to meet them. And if you haven't checked it out and you're looking for overall coverage of Star Trek, Mission Log, I believe they're in the second season of Next Gen at this point.
Yeah, and I think I just recently we got some feedback from a listener of ours who is actually listening to three separate podcasts. One is ours, about that had original series related episodes while he's watching the original series episode. So he'll go and grab the Mission Log episode about the episode he's going to watch. He's grabbing our episode about the one he's about to watch, and a third podcast who also talk about it. So
yeah, Warp 10, I believe.
Warp 10, right.
And that was listener, I believe, Mike.
Right. And and he actually made a point to say that he likes the three different approaches that the different podcasts take. And that, to me, that was a really big moment to realize that we really are doing something different and not just rehashing what another podcast has already done. I would hate to think I was stepping on somebody else's show.
Yeah, so it is really neat that I know that I do this with podcasts, is anytime you can listen to as many podcasts as possible about a topic that you like or love, it's sort of a special joy.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's kind of self-affirming in the fact that you're listening to people who have a similar passion that you have. And, you know, as a guy who's a big tech guy, I love to listen to people talk about tech that I like. And I got to imagine it's the same for Trek fans and fans of people who listen to our other two shows as well.
Yeah. So that brings us now to Sunday, which was kind of the day that we were both waiting for. And before things got really, really exciting, early in the morning, there was a panel with Harlan Ellison and Walter Koenig, which two good friends. And it was really neat to well, first of all, Five-Year Mission played back in the USSR when they came out.
Yeah.
And they were both dancing, like straight up full on dancing.
For two older guys, I mean, I think Harlan Ellison's around 80.
Yeah, he's in his 80s, yeah.
And Walter Koenig were both kind of dancing to Five-Year Mission's music. And I remember thinking to myself, because we met Walter Koenig at a convention in New Jersey not long ago, that you know, Walter was really accommodating and a happy guy, but I just got the feeling that he was getting on in years and he didn't seem as energetic. But when I saw him coming out and dancing on the stage, I said, well, I guess I was wrong.
Yeah, and their panel was really, really fun, because you could tell that they have a friendship that goes back many, many years. So they were taking fun little jabs at each other. And at one point, Walter actually got up and moved to another seat. And eventually Harlan followed him. It was really a neat discussion between the two of them. And I'm not sure we covered it, but we did get to finally meet Harlan Ellison. We found a great opportunity. I believe it was on Saturday.
It was Saturday.
Where he had an unannounced signing. His signing was not listed in the agenda, so nobody knew to line up for him. And we must have caught him within 2 minutes of getting there.
Yeah, we happened to walk into the vendor room. And when you walked into the vendor room, there was an aisle. And when you walked through the break in the middle of this aisle, there was a second aisle. And Harlan Ellison was off to the right-hand side. And as we walked through that break, we glanced over and saw maybe 5 to 6 people standing in front of Harlan Ellison's booth, and we saw Harlan sitting there. So we immediately made a beeline and got in that line. So we were right. It only took us maybe 2 to 3 minutes to get in front of Ellison himself.
And I actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I think it was Friday, and we might have talked about it. So if we did, forgive us. If when we did talk about it, it was a long time ago at this point from our perspective, because we were in the middle of just a blur of a weekend. But either way,
it bled together.
Yeah, that was a really, really cool panel. It was cool to meet Harlan, such an amazing writer with such a huge contribution to Star Trek. And it was really great. And speaking of contributions to Star Trek, there were some other people we met that I don't think we talked about. We both met and interacted with Yeoman Rand Grace Lee Whitney.
Yes.
On two separate days. And then also we chatted with Tanya Lamani, who played Kara in the episode Wolf in the Fold. She's right. The girl that Scotty murders. So that was really neat to see her and talk to her and get an autograph from her. I'm already starting to put together a little corner in my house here that's devoted to Star Trek, the original series, which is going to be all the pictures we took this weekend with original series people, all of my original series autographs, including the Gorn, and also the Juan Ortiz cards that we got that we're going to frame up, which I don't think we talked about yet.
No, and before we do, I just want to throw back something about the ladies of the original series. So we just brought up two of them that we had some interaction with. So we brought up Tanya and we brought up Grace Lee Whitney. And during their panel, just to get into some detail, I think it was Sally Kellerman that had said, and they all co-signed on it, that they all feel so special when they appear at Star Trek conventions, because the fans just have this outpouring of love for them. And I think that when we spoke to them in the vendor room at their tables, that really showed through. Because I your interaction with Tanya Lamani was wonderful, and she had a lot to say to you. And my interaction with Grace Lee Whitney really stood out to me, because I had in my hand, I had the second issue of the City on the Edge of Forever comic.
Oh, right. Yeah, this is great.
In my hand at the time that I had just gotten autographed by Harlan Ellison and Juan Ortiz, who drew the cover. And inside that book, I think 2 or 3 pages in, there was a beautiful illustration of the Janice Rand character, because she, although she does not appear in the City on the Edge of Forever episode of the original series, she was a big part of Harlan Ellison's original story.
Yeah.
And that is what's being published as these comic episodes that are currently being issued. We're on the second issue now, and I had the comic in my hand, and I'm standing in front of Grace Lee Whitney, and I had leafed through the first few pages, and I said, "Have you seen how they've illustrated your character in this comic book?" And she says, "No, I haven't."
Yeah, she didn't even know she was in it.
No, and I opened up the thing and I showed it to her, and she was completely taken aback and humbled by what a beautiful job they did of illustrating her character in this book. And we had this interaction for a couple of minutes about, you know, what could have been, and if Janice Rand was allowed to stay in the original series. And you could really tell that Grace Lee Whitney was genuinely disappointed that she was not able to continue that role and continue the interaction with Captain Kirk that was building up. So it was great to interact with these people. And that is one of the things that I think is very, very special about some of these conventions, is that, you know, you can meet up with anybody, technically anybody who's sitting in the vendor area that's not a pre-scheduled photo or autograph opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
If you catch these people when they don't have a line, you can really sit and talk to them for a while. And a great many of them are really, really accommodating to the fans. And I think we found that out talking specifically to Grace Lee Whitney, Barbara Luna, and Tanya Lamani.
No, I'd agree. And I know Tanya mentioned at one point, she said, they're not there to make a lot of money. It really is to sort of give back and say thank you to these fans that are remembering work that they did in some cases 50 years earlier.
Exactly. And the great thing about it is that as a Trek fan, you're used to hearing people down on Trek and goofing on Trek. And these people are, especially these ladies, are so appreciative of their fan base, and they really embrace the Star Trek fans.
Yeah.
And it really struck me at this Vegas convention how much these actors and actresses appreciate the Star Trek fan base. Being there and hearing them say that really struck home for me.
Oh, same here. So this led into what had to be the start of a really, really big moment in a lot of people's weekends. And that was the 12:55 on Sunday William Shatner Q&A session, where William Shatner came out and he was scheduled to go just about an hour long. And I got to say that this exceeded my expectations.
I agree. And for anybody who doubts William Shatner, this guy is a master speaker. He's a master presenter. He came out and just rattled through personal stories. Now, to rewind a bit, Shatner had sustained a bit of a leg injury prior to the San Diego Comic-Con, which was the weekend prior to the Trek convention.
Yeah.
So we had heard that he was riding around in a scooter and walking around with a crutch. And sure enough, when he arrived at the convention, he was still in that scooter and using that crutch. Now, the first thing he did when he got out on stage was explained the injury and why he was using a crutch and it was a fascinating story. And granted, it was pretty much a fall off of a horse, but he turned it into a 10-minute enthralling story that the entire audience got swept up in about how this horse came to this position and how he wound up. And it was actually the second time he'd been thrown from that horse. And it was fascinating to listen to. And, you know, this guy is such a great speaker and speaks with such great confidence that you just get sucked right into it.
Yeah, he really is an engaging speaker. And we both saw on separate occasions his one-man show, Shatner's World. And this was kind of a neat little extension to that. And he's tremendous. He's engaging, and he keeps your interest the whole time. And he was able to handle the Q&A portion, which was only the last 10 or 15 minutes of the 45 to 50 minutes that he went. He even kept the Q&A portion interesting, which is sometimes hard to do when you're getting questions of limited value.
Yeah, and you know, something that really stood out to me, and I wanted to make specific mention of this while we're talking, is that there was a point in time during the Q&A where a mentally challenged guy was in line and asked Shatner, or attempted to ask Shatner, some questions, and it was apparent that the guy was a challenged individual, and Shatner handled it with such grace and poise that I was actually really moved by the way that he talked to this gentleman. And he didn't dismiss him. He allowed the guy to say what he was trying to say, no matter how hard it was for him to get it out. He remained really professional and really empathetic, and actually told the guy that he was special and that he appreciated him coming to the convention and talking to him. And I think that really speaks volumes. And people say really rough things about Shatner and how selfish he is, but I think, to me, that speaks volumes about the person inside.
Yeah.
That he would be that accommodating and professional, because we'd seen, and not to say anything bad, I really am not wanting to jump on anybody, but we had seen previous panels where people had, in your words, Craig, not suffered fools.
Yeah.
And really kind of roasted some of the question people that were in the lines. And William Shatner really stayed very empathetic and very, very professional in the face of some really rough questions. And I really applaud him for that.
Right on. I totally, totally agree. And just a real class act. And it was so great to be able to see him speak. And then a few hours later, line up and get our picture taken with him, which I know on Facebook you put It was, I think between the two of us, it was listed as a bucket list item.
Yep.
And then also a picture 40 years in the making.
Yes. Yeah. I've said this before on the show. I've been a Star Trek fan since, you know, my childhood in the 1970s. When I was a little kid growing up, I remember watching Star Trek with my uncle many, many times. And that's where I really fell in love with the series. And I think that's really why I'm so original series focused. And I've always wanted to meet William Shatner. My mother loathes William Shatner. So this is funny. It's a funny moment for me that I got to meet him. And my mother was so anti. But this is something that I've been waiting a long, 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 long time for. And it was really great to stand up there next to him. And I think if you look at the picture that we took with William Shatner and you look at me specifically, I'm on the right-hand side. I've got my hands in my pockets. I'm wearing a blue shirt. You can see how not relaxed I am. Yeah. You look really relaxed in that picture.
I don't know. It was one of those things where I felt like I was floating because I've talked about the handful of times I've been in attendance for events that William Shatner's at. I believe I talked about on this podcast the time I saw him on Conan O'Brien and when they went to commercial, he stood up and sort of looked out in the crowd and I felt the energy of the man. It's really hard for me to describe, but I felt something that wasn't there prior to him being on that stage. And being within inches of the man on that Sunday and getting a picture with him was surreal. I felt like I was floating before, during, and after it. It really was an amazing experience and a picture that I know that captures a memory that I'm going to treasure for a long time.
You and me both. And I'll bring this back up. I hope you remember this, but you remember my panic situation right after we got the picture taken?
Yes. You said, I don't remember looking at the camera.
It happened so quickly. We're standing at the end of the line and we were the next people to get in front of him. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, what do I say?
Yeah.
What do I do? And I'm walking. We walk up and we were instructed to not try to shake hands and to walk behind him when we walked around him. So I'm trying to keep this in mind. And I get up and I know you said hello, Mr. Shatner. I said hello, Mr. Shatner. And then my mind goes blank, blank for the couple of seconds we were there. And I remember as I walked away, I remember saying, I really enjoyed seeing you on Broadway.
Yeah.
And he said, thank you.
Oh, awesome.
And I keep walking and all of a sudden I feel this sense of panic set in because I honestly and completely do not remember looking at the camera for the photograph.
Yeah.
And you remember for a good 10 minutes after that was done, I kept saying, I just don't remember looking at the camera. Did I look? The photographer would have come and grabbed us and taken another picture, right?
Yeah.
Right? And I remember finally when we got the picture, hours later, I felt that sense of relief. Like, okay, I did look at the camera. For some reason, I completely blanked on that.
That's funny. But it did turn out to be a great picture and a great experience. And I know something that we were both really looking forward to. And like you said, it's something you can cross off that bucket list.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm glad that we finally were both able to meet Shatner himself and just stand there and get our picture taken with him. It's something that I can easily cross off the list.
Yeah. And I got to say that in all the years that we've both been fans of Shatner before we even met, I think it's kind of neat that it was able to happen for us connected to this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. That was one thing that I was really happy that we were at this convention and able to be there to promote the show that we're doing and meet so many great, great people throughout this throughout the entire convention.
Yeah. And speaking of great people, the convention sort of ended panel-wise officially in the secondary theater, the DeForest Kelly Theater, at 5:20 on Sunday with the We Touch the Future, a look at the impact of Star Trek, The Experience, with our good friends April A. Baer and Vernon Wilmer. And also on hand was sort of Star Trek expert Larry Nemechek, former experienced actors Nicole Padberg and Michael Hartnett as well. And this was kind of an interesting panel, isn't it? In that it really focused on how the experience impacted the lives of some of the people that went there and experienced it and were fans of it and really spent a lot of time there. They told some really, really moving stories. There was a woman there who it sounds like she had gone through a really, really terrible situation that required multiple surgeries on her face. And she said she didn't look too good for a while, but going to the experience made her realize that she could go out and not be judged. I think it was really neat to see that side of things and to hear Vernon and April and the other folks talk about that end of their experience at the experience.
I completely agree with you. There were some very moving stories, and unfortunately, I had a story that I wanted to share, and unfortunately, as creation panels go,
they run long.
They're very set time, and if you run long, you get cut off. And I did not have time to get up and actually share the story that I wanted to share. And you know what? I'm going to take that opportunity now to tell that short story for anybody listening to this podcast. And I hope people who were at the experience or people who worked at the experience get to hear this. And what I wanted to say, and they took a good piece of the experience panel out to show a video and talk about Tom Daishley, who was the Klingon General Motog at the experience, who we've talked about on the show before, who was unfortunately, he unfortunately lost his life in a home invasion not long ago. And I know that was a very, very difficult moment for everybody that worked with him, a very difficult experience to go through. We talked to April and Vernon about this, and I wanted to share a memory that I had of Tom Daishley, General Motog, and that was from our last visit to the Star Trek experience about 3 to 4 weeks or so before it actually closed in 2008. Now, if you remember, I'm sure that you do, when we arrived there, the gift shop was almost completely out of merchandise.
Yeah, it was pretty bare.
The photo op experience that took your pictures and stuff with the different characters, that was completely shuttered. There was a long, long wall of memories and cards and notes and pictures that people who loved the experience had pinned up there. Just a lot of wonderful, wonderful memories of why they loved the Star Trek experience and why they were going to miss it. And I remember, and I'm sure you felt this too, there was a feeling of like a malaise over the entire place. You know, the people who were taking your money to get in, you could tell they knew that they were out of a job in a few weeks. And the people who were working in the restaurant and the bartenders, everybody had this sullen feeling about them. And you couldn't blame them. You couldn't blame them. Now, as we were walking around, you and I run into General Motog.
Yeah.
Tom Daishley. And, you know, you could not tell. You could not tell. He was so in character and so dedicated. He went on for a good 10 to 15 minutes with us about how we couldn't trust the Ferengi that worked there because they were going to try to rip us off. And he was talking about some of the technology that was on display and kind of downplaying some of the Starfleet technology that was there. He was so in character and so dedicated. You could not tell that he was going to be out of that experience in a few weeks. He was just going to be regular Tom Daishley again. General Motog was going to be out with the rest of the experience crew, and that spoke volumes to me about how much the guy really loved what he did.
Yeah,
and I really wish that I got the chance to tell this story to those people in that audience, because to me that stood out as a huge a boon to what those people who played those characters in the experience felt about what they were doing.
Yeah, and Vernon actually devoted his time that was designated for him to speak to showing the video he had, the tribute video he'd made, which was really, really special of Vernon to do.
Yeah, it was very moving too, because he captured some great moments. Some of the ones that really stuck out to me were, there were some moments where Tom Daichle was in the makeup chair.
I think, yeah, it was the last day he was going to wear the makeup.
Yeah, and he was getting prepared to go out onto the floor. He was kind of halfway done with his makeup or so, or a little more than halfway. And he was just kind of talking about his character and what he was doing. And it was so moving to see that. And I'm so glad that Vernon has all of that material, all of those pictures and the videos, you know, commemorating Tom and what he did at the experience. Because, you know, I mean, for the few minutes that we were with him, I have a lasting memory, and you've got to imagine all of the people that interacted with him, especially people who were there all the time. He had to be a very special guy.
Totally, totally. And it was sort of a somber mood, but it definitely felt very loving as well. So
absolutely,
it was a really interesting panel. And I know after the panel, we all sort of milled around, and I know we were able to give out some CDs of the episode that we did with Vernon in April way back in October. Mm-hmm. And we also ran into Stefan from Alaska.
Very cool guy.
It was funny. Me and him were listening to Vernon talk about something, and I went to go hand Stefan the CD, and he said, "Oh, are you Craig?" And I said, "Yes, I am." He goes, "Oh, I recognized your voice immediately," and he asked for a matchbook. So I was able to give him a Quarks matchbook. And it was really neat that he had listened to our con preview episode, I think he said 2 times.
Well, you were talking to him already when I walked up, and when you filled me in on the fact that he knew us already, I was kind of like a deer in headlights. I was like, wow, we ran into somebody who was a listener of our show that we didn't know previously as a listener. And he turned out to be a great guy. You know, he's now a friend of ours on Facebook. He likes our page, and we'll be able to interact with him back and forth. And thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much for pointing this stuff out to us while we were there at the panel. It really means a lot to me, and I'm sure it means a lot to you.
Oh, totally, totally. And it was a great experience. And I know Stefan's not really an original series guy, so it'll be interesting to see how he reacts to the original series once he jumps in, and I'm sure he'll let us know on the Facebook page when he takes that leap. So very neat. It was a nice sort of encounter to have towards the end of the convention.
Yeah, absolutely. A great way to round out the convention. I'm glad that the experience panel was the last thing that we experienced, because, you know, April and Vernon are our friends, and we both love the Star Trek experience. So it was a perfect way to close out the weekend. But it's not the perfect way to end our show. We still have a couple of post-convention follow-ups, one from a new friend and one from a member of 5-Year Mission, to share with you before we wrap this episode up. First up is a guy we were fortunate enough to run into at the convention. His name is Donnie Versaja, and let's listen to the audio we recorded on the show floor with Donnie. So Craig and I are just on our way out of the Grace Lee Whitney and Harlan Ellison panel when we ran into a gentleman in a wonderful red shirt outfit, and we were surprised. We wanted to get him over here to talk to us before something unfortunate happened to him. So with us we have...
I'm Donnie Versaja.
Very cool to meet you, Donnie. And I have to ask, why the red shirt?
Well, first of all, red's my favorite color, and I just think it looks sharp. Plus, with what I do with... my computer game stuff that I build, I feel like I'm more of on the engineering side of things anyway. So I also have a gold shirt in store for the rest of the weekend, but I wanted to do red the first 2 days.
Right, cool. Hopefully you'll survive your second day with the red shirt on to get that gold shirt on.
I hope so, or hopefully Nomad can come along and revive me and repair me or something like that.
Very cool. Well, hopefully you won't have to relearn the entire English language before you can get back on the...
Well, Uhura did it pretty quickly, so I figured that, you know, with 23rd century technology, I might be able to do it too.
So. Sounds cool. So you're going to be wearing your gold shirt. You're going to do a Shatner photo op. You're going to wear your gold shirt for that?
Right, absolutely. I feel like I got to be in the gold shirt for my Shatner photo op. I'm also, my day job is I manage a bar, so that's my leadership side. So I feel like I'm entitled to the gold shirt as well. Oh.
So are we safe to assume that Kirk is your favorite original series character, or?
I would have to say Kirk is probably, you know, my hero. You know, when other kids were watching Batman, Superman, I was watching Captain Kirk. So he's my childhood hero.
Very cool. I think we're all on the same page with that. Craig and I talk about that all the time on the show, how the original series. I'm a Spock guy. He's a Kirk guy. So any other photo ops you're looking to get here?
Nana Visitor, I'm looking forward to today in a couple hours, actually. I just actually started watching Deep Space Nine not too long ago.
We did too.
And I'm just infatuated with Kira and Nana. And so I can't pass up the opportunity to stand right beside her and get a photo. So.
Awesome. And favorite original series episode?
That's a tough one. I probably have a group of three, but my favorite one, I think, and that I've probably seen the most is Balance of Terror.
Very cool.
Just the whole, I'm kind of a fan of the more militaristic side of Star Trek, mm-hmm. Especially like the Nicholas Meyer movies, Wrath of Khan and Undiscovered Country, that harder edge. Although I'm all about the heart of Trek, I still enjoy that military side. So Balance of Terror, as a kid, I used to go to the library. This was before you could, you know, when I couldn't afford VHS or DVDs or anything. As a kid, I'd go to the library and they would let you rent Star Trek VHS tapes or check them out. And so I would do that and I would get Balance of Terror and Galileo 7 all the time. And I'd watch them and watch them and watch them. And every time I'd go back and I'd swap those two out and just, you know, those two just kind of like, those bring back so many childhood memories of just those rainy summer days sitting inside watching Trek, and I don't know, it's just I'm in love with that episode.
So. Very, very awesome. Well, I have to ask, since you said it's a group of three, what are the other two?
Mirror Mirror, and The Trouble with Tribbles, for sure. You know, it's just got so much character in that episode. It's so colorful and comedic, and you know, it's got Klingons, it's got, you know, the K-7 space station, Tribbles, you know, and just it's awesome all around. So
very cool. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us, and I have a feeling that Donnie may be making an appearance on the show again in the near future. So have a great time at the con. Maybe we'll catch up with you another time.
Thanks for the opportunity to do this. This is wonderful.
No problem, man. So glad to get to know you. All right. And that was really cool, and we're fortunate enough to have back with us right now on the show, live and in person, Mr. Donnie Versace. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. How are you?
Awesome, awesome. So you got home from the convention okay? Everything's cool?
I did. It was a midnight flight. I didn't get as much sleep as I'd like to on the plane, but I made it home safe and sound.
So. Yeah, always my problem, too. I have a trouble sleeping. So you flew out on Sunday night?
Sunday night at midnight, yeah. Wow. Or actually at 1. It was close to 1 from Las Vegas to Houston, then Houston to home. So the cool part of my flight home was, you know, it was late night. We were flying over the desert. The cabin lights went out, and I had a window seat. I always get the window seat. And it was just a fitting end to the, you know, the convention, was able to look out the window. I covered up, you know, my peripherals, looked out the window. I could see, you know, just the, you know, millions of stars in the sky and everything, and just kind of like was a very fitting end to, you know, the whole Star Trek convention. So.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad to hear you had a great ending to it. So we had a great time meeting you at the convention, and I didn't realize it at the time that we actually ran into you in the hallway, but I thought it was really cool that when we got to the dessert party later, we found out that you had gotten yourself into a little bit of an act with 5-Year Mission, the house band. So I wanted to lead in by asking you about how your on-stage performance with the band at the dessert party came about.
Well, I was walking through the vendors room earlier in the convention, and Andy from 5-Year Mission and, you know, the rest of the guys, I'm not sure their names, but I know Andy's, they were all looking at me because I'm tall like Andy. Mm-hmm. I have glasses like Andy. You know, generally, you know, we're about the same build. So everybody noticed that, you know, I looked like Andy. So later, I was picking up one of my photos from the photo op pickup place I think it was my my DS9 or my Terry Farrell photo op, and I was going out, and they had noticed me again, and they had, you know, asked me if I was staying, you know, for the rest of the con, and if I'd be willing to help them out on a little joke, which was to, you know, go out there as if for the dessert party, go out and sit down at the drum set without Andy, pretending to be Andy, and start to count off a song, and then die, keel over. And then Andy would come in and take my place. And since we were both wearing the red shirt, you know, they thought it was a great, and it was a great idea, you know, for some comedic effect. They asked me if I would do that, and I told them, sure. And so the next night, they got me into the dessert party because I wasn't a gold or captain's chair member. So they told me they'd get me in. I went backstage, met the guys, we waited around for a while, and then I went out on stage and did the act.
You pulled it off very well. I actually was fortunate enough to be right up front, and I got a great video of it, which I'm going to post in the show notes for this episode so everybody can see what we're talking about. So this was kind of a very Spinal Tap-esque moment where, you know, Donnie, who does look like Andy Farke, from a distance, I was wondering to myself, and I really should have turned around and asked some of the people there at the show if they realized that wasn't Andy or not. Because, you know, from a distance, you guys do kind of look alike. So
right.
You come out, you sit at the drum set, you count in, you actually did a couple of clicks, and then you stood up and you screamed and keeled over. And then Andy himself walks out and it looks like he just steps right over your corpse and sits at the drum set and starts playing. So when you hit the ground, I couldn't see you anymore. Did you just roll under the curtain?
Yeah, I did, actually. They told me to roll under the curtain. So that's what I did. And I was scared that people saw me roll under it, but I watched the video, and you can't really tell unless you watch really closely. But
I didn't see it. I mean, I was kind of at the front of the stage. I guess maybe if you were way back further, you might have been able to see you, but the lights were low, so I think the joke got pulled off pretty perfectly.
Right. I didn't hear too many laughs, but
I think people were really confused by it because there was really no setup for this whatsoever.
I will say that my... You know, because I was going over in my head, like, how exactly am I going to, you know, do this? What am I going to do? Am I going to scream? And I think I was channeling Chekhov when in Star Trek II, when the SETI eel, you know, when after, I forget the commander's name, or Captain Terrell, after Captain Terrell, you know, kills himself, and then Chekhov screams. I think I was channeling that. I think that's what the moment I wanted to convey.
You know, you mentioned that. I think you pulled that off well. I'm thinking of that scene in my head, and you did it. He, you know, he kind of grabs kind of the side of his head or his neck and kind of keels over. You did that very well. I'm going to have to go back and compare that to the Star Trek II footage.
Awesome.
So that was cool. And, you know, I'll take this moment to, again, thank 5-Year Mission. Craig and I were in the same position that Donnie was in. We were preferred weekend people. We were not captain's chair or gold members, so we weren't provided access to that party. But thanks to 5-Year Mission for putting us all on the guest list so that we could all be there and witness that show and that really funny moment together.
Yeah, that was very nice of them to do, for sure.
So. They're all really, really great guys, and we'll be talking to some of them a little bit later. But I wanted to talk a little bit with you, Donnie, before we get to some of your other stuff that we talked about in the interview. I saw that you opted for a few of the pro photo ops. So it looks like you got a picture with William Shatner. You got one with Terry Farrell. You got Spiner, Dorn, and Burton, as well as McFadden and Surtis. So are there any particular things that stick out to you about any of those photo ops?
Actually, I could probably tell a story about each one. A short one. The first one was with Spiner, Burton, and Dorn. I think nothing really compares to that moment when you're standing in line and you get closer and closer and you can see the actors a little bit better, you know, and just and all of us, all Trekkies that were there, you know, have watched these people for years on the television. So it's just really just a surreal experience. The closer you get and you see that, you know, their mannerisms and their, you know, and then there were a lot of them were very active. I remember, you know, Brent Spiner was just snapping his fingers and kind of to the music and stuff that they had playing. And anyway, I didn't know what to say, and I had opted, you know, in my brain, I was like, I'm not going to say anything to these people. I don't know what to say that hasn't been said before. It's going to come out stupid. So I would just walk up to each one of these things, just kind of silent, just smiling. And so I remember walking up, and LeVar Burton, like, you know, held out his fist, like, trying to give me nucks. And mm-hmm. I thought that was really cool, you know. So I did it, and I was just kind of like, ah, starstruck, you know. And the people in front of me were from Finland, and I remember hearing them tell Brent Spiner that. So when I got up, I guess, you know, Brent maybe had thought that I was part of their group. He's like, oh, are you from Finland? And I said, no. And he goes, awesome. And then I walked away. But I just thought, you know, just LeVar Burton giving me, you know, a fist bump was awesome. And the other thing that I guess, you know, for me being as tall as I am, you know, I'm just about 6'3". I didn't realize that, you know, when you watch these people on TV, they seem so much larger than life. And then when you get up to them, you know, it's just so weird how small they are compared to me. You know, it's like, I guess other people that are tall or, you know, might have similar experiences, but it's very, it's just, it puts you off when you get up there and you realize, you know, oh, wow, these people are normal people. You know, they're all different shapes and sizes, and it's just a really weird experience.
You're absolutely right. I opted for the LeVar Burton photo op. I talked about it on the prior episode, and he actually gave me the fist bump as well. And I was kind of taken aback by how much taller I was than he was. I didn't realize after all of the time of seeing him on Reading Rainbow and on Next Generation and in the movies that he was shorter than I was.
Right. Yeah. It's a weird experience.
It really, really is. But it looks like you had a heck of a lot of fun in your photo ops. And I was both Craig and I are really happy with the way our photo ops came out. Do you share that?
Yeah, no, the quality of them are great. I've you know, got them framed right here next to my desk, actually. I have no complaints about them at all.
That's fantastic. I'm glad to hear that. And I know a lot of people that I talked to also had really positive experiences with the photo ops. But speaking of photos, I've been, now that we've been friends on Facebook and we're both members of the unofficial convention Facebook page, I've noticed that people have been tagging you in their own photos. Do you have any special memories of meeting any of those people in particular?
Well, the main group that I was hanging out with, I don't know their last name. Well, Chris Smith and Michael Wynn and Sue and Stacey Viceroy. Those were my main the people that I'd met on Facebook before the con, and I kind of stuck with them because I just felt comfortable around them because I'd been kind of talking to them a little bit on and off before the convention. So I kind of stuck around with them, and they were great, you know, great people. Just really nice, and you know, taking me into their fold and showing me around and introducing me to lots of people. I was very, very, you know, happy with the way that, you know, people accepted me, you know, meeting me for the first time, but wanting me to have a great time and making sure that I did. So I walked around on Saturday with them. Sue was dressed up as I want to make sure I'm pronouncing it right. Nona from Private Little War, is that the correct pronunciation?
Uh-huh, yep. Yeah. Yep.
And Stacey Viceroy was Elan of Troyes.
Oh, that was who that was.
Yeah. That's,
we remember seeing her. She looked fantastic.
And Chris Smith was her guard.
Yep.
And they were just, they looked awesome. And,
they did.
You know, they let me hang around. And their costumes were obviously more in depth than mine. I mean, I was just wearing a Starfleet uniform, which, you know, was, you know, great as it looked, it just was still just a Starfleet uniform, and their costumes were all homemade and just, like, you know, spectacular. And so hanging around with them, you know, they were getting stopped every, you know, 2 minutes or less, you know, less than that, every few seconds in the vendor's room they were getting stopped to get pictures. And so, you know, it kind of made you feel like a celebrity for a minute, you know. And but then, you know, I'd hang around, you know, I'd take some pictures at the Guardian of Forever, and then some other people in Starfleet uniforms wanted to come up. I think the guy's name is Jeff as well. But he and I think her name was Lisa, I can't remember. All three of us got up by the Guardian and took photos. And then a guy dressed in as the monster from Murasaki 312, Galileo, the Galileo 7 monster. What is his name?
Oh, one of the giants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
he had a huge spear, and he was dressed as a giant. And then one guy got down as a dead red shirt, and you know, me and the other guy had our phasers out, and that was a really cool photo op right there. It was just fun, and that's one of my favorite episodes. So you know, to be able to kind of reenact a moment from that, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that hearing you talk through all of these things reminds me of how great that convention is for Trek fans. It's so inclusive, and people who have been to it. This was actually my first Vegas Trek Con. I've been to the Trek Cons in Jersey before, but the Vegas Trek Con was a bit different in the fact that everybody seemed to be so amenable to just meeting new people, and it didn't matter what era of Trek you were into, everybody was welcome and everybody was embraced. And just hearing you talk about all of these people that you met just reminds me of how great the spirit is in Vegas.
Yeah, you know, this is the first and only Star Trek convention I've been to, so I don't really have anything to compare it to. But you know, I realized, you know, being out of my element, being around, you know, because I traveled alone, mm-hmm. and I didn't really know anybody other than just a few people from Facebook, and I realized how shy I am around, you know. I work in a bar as my day job, and everybody there knows me, and you know, I'm a member of my community. But then going off to a place where you don't know anybody, it was tough. And I remembered how shy of a person I am when I'm around, you know, people I don't know. And so then for them to actually, you know, speak to them, and then them show me around, and introduce me to all their friends was just awesome, and it made me feel, you know, more relaxed and more in my home. And you know, now I think that, you know, going back next year and seeing all these people again, I'll just kind of fall right back into where we left off.
It's funny, you just answered my next question. I was going to ask you if you were planning to go next year, but now
absolutely
know.
I don't think I can't not, you know, I don't think that after going once, it's like I said, I think I posted on the unofficial Facebook page for the convention was, you know, screw Halloween, screw Thanksgiving, screw Christmas. Star Trek Las Vegas is now my favorite holiday. And that's going to be what I look forward to from here on out.
That's brilliant. And, you know, it's funny. I'll share a quick anecdote here. When Craig and I have been to Vegas a whole bunch of times together over the years. I've been there actually 12 times in my own life. And this was the first time I went to the Star Trek Con. And as we were in the airport waiting to get on the plane, we were talking about whether or not we were going to go back next year. We were planning to go back for the 50th anniversary of Trek, but that's in 2 years from now.
Right.
So we were kind of on the fence about whether we were going to go back next year. And we kind of made up some criteria, what would have to happen for us to go back. And the one big thing was, if Creation brought back 5-Year Mission next year, who are now our friends, we would have to come back for that. And now it looks like that's what's going to happen. In talks with some of the 5-Year guys, I was talking to Mike Rittenhouse earlier, and although it's not completely confirmed, he says it looks like they're going to be back next year. So Craig and I are not going to have any excuse not to come back ourselves.
Nice. And good for those guys, man. They worked hard, and they, you know, did a great job. And their songs, you know, they let me have a CD of theirs for doing the whole red shirt stunt. So, you know, being able to listen to that, you know, in a more controlled recording, you know, version.
So moving on now, something that you alluded to in our short interview with you at the convention is that you've done quite a bit of 3D work. Modeling the interiors of the Enterprise ships, mostly I've seen shots of the interior of the original series Enterprise as well as the Next Generation Enterprise. And I wanted to bring this stuff up to let you give the audience a little bit of a background on what you're really working on here. So I've gone through all of the images on your blog and your Flickr page. And I'll tell you, it's pretty impressive stuff. And being someone who worked on some of that stuff when I was a bit younger and in college, and I actually did a model of the Enterprise myself. I never did any interiors, but I know how tough that work can be. So you want to give us a bit of a background on what you're doing?
Sure. Let's see. When I was 15, I started working with a gaming engine. That was kind of similar to, you know, it was way back in the day, so graphics were not, you know, what they are today. But it was with the Dark Forces game, which was a Star Wars game. And it was very, you know, 16-bit graphics, 256 colors, you know, very square, light rooms, you know, not many angles and stuff like that. I started working with that and, you know, built a couple of little Star Wars levels. But after a while, I was like, well, you know, why don't I use what I've learned to make, you know, interiors of the Enterprise, since I'm, you know, as much as I love Star Wars, I'm a way bigger Star Trek fan. And, you know, I remember, you know, going before that, I was building, you know, trying to build little dioramas of the interiors of the Enterprise when I was younger, out of cardboard boxes and stuff. And and so I never got far with that because it was, you know, way too complicated for somebody that young to do, you know, much with it. But I stuck with the gaming engine stuff because, you know, you can make it look more believable and you know, to be able to... To be able to walk through it is a really big deal, and that you know, when most people think of 3D artwork, they think of, you know, the static images, and there's been tons of, you know, recreations of, you know, Enterprise interiors with you know, rendered out in 3ds Max or Maya or whatever, but there's never been a really good real time where you could walk through it in real time, and that's kind of the experience that I would like to have. So over the years, just working with different gaming engines, you know, I decided to I've actually, with every gaming engine I've used, I've tried to build the Enterprise interiors with each of them, and I would get so far before I'd realize there were certain limitations of the engine, which brings me to now, which I've started working with the Unreal Engine, and it's amazing. It's just, you know, top of the line game engine. It's used in several games on the market right now. And you know, to be able to use it for my purposes is amazing. It's a great opportunity. So I've been rebuilding, you know, everything that I've built before in other gaming engines. I've been rebuilding it with the Unreal Engine, and the results I'm getting are just amazing. Especially with the release of Unreal 4, which was just a few months ago. Just how much more realistic the environments look, and the lighting and the reflections on the surfaces. It really looks amazing. And so, you know, I'm planning on, for right now, making as much as, you know, the Enterprise interiors that I can. You know, I don't want to do the whole ship because that would just take, you know, that would just be too much. But just key areas that you've seen, you know, the bridge, the transporter room, crew quarters, sick bay, engineering, you know, all those areas, and be able to walk through it and perhaps, you know, once I get to the programming aspect, right now it's just kind of visual, building the visual aspects. Once I get to the programming aspects, making, you know, parts of the ship interactive, being able to, you know, crawl through a Jeffrey's tube or launch a torpedo or, you know, hit a button on the bridge that, you know, triggers a red alert or something like that, which has been done in a game before. I got to kind of give credit to the game Star Trek Elite Force, which was a Voyager-based game. And the expansion pack for that was a virtual Voyager type thing where you got to walk through key areas of the Voyager. And, you know, I've you know, that was pretty much a big inspiration was, you know, I'm not much of a Voyager fan yet because I haven't really, to be honest, I haven't watched a lot of Voyager. But I took that idea and ran with it and thought about, you know, how awesome would it be to walk through the original series Enterprise or the movie era Enterprise or the Enterprise D. So for years now, I've just been working on different iterations and doing research and finding schematics and, you know, to try to make it as accurate as possible. And that, you know, it's just a matter of time before, you know, I finally finish something. But now that the Unreal 4 engine is proving to be so versatile and good, I'm hoping to finally make something that I can release with this engine.
All right, that's great. I want to give a quick background on the Unreal Engine for anybody who is not familiar with it or is not a gamer and is kind of confused as to what the Unreal Engine is. So a long time ago, back around 1998, a company by the name of Epic Games created a game called Unreal, and they built a graphics engine to render this game in real time. It was originally developed as a first-person shooter-style game, but it's been used for a bunch of different role-playing games, online role-playing, what they call massive multiplayer online role-playing games. It's been used all over the place. One of the great things about it is that it's very portable. It's very cross-platform, so it will run. So say Donnie builds his Enterprise in the Unreal Engine, he's got the ability to deploy that on just about every major computing platform there is. So you got it on Windows, you've got it for Mac, Linux, PlayStation, iPhone, Android, and even the web at this point can run a web version of the Unreal Engine. So when Donnie says he's working in this Unreal 4 engine, it gives him the ability to deploy it all over the place without having to redevelop it or recompile it for use on other platforms. Would you say that's accurate?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I built it on my, any game is built on a PC, but I haven't really put much thought into what all platforms I'll release it on yet, because I haven't, there's so much work to do. But definitely to be able to share the experience of walking through one of these ships, which, you could also almost, you could definitely say that those are main characters of the show, the Enterprise, and to give that ability for a Trekkie to be able to walk through the corridors of the Enterprise would be amazing. I get to do it, but as I'm building the game, and it's a pretty cool experience.
Listen, I'm very anxious to be able to walk through it myself. I've always wanted to be able to walk through the corridors, and seeing just your still shots was kind of a exciting thing to me. I'm thinking, wow, I can't wait to be able to load this onto my computer on my huge monitor and be able to kind of immerse myself in walking around in these environments. Now, you do all the modeling and texturing yourself?
Yes, that's all me. I try to do it from scratch. I don't try to use screen grabs of a display console from the show. I try to, if I'm looking at an LCAR screen that I want to be featured in the level, I'm going to build it from scratch in Photoshop. I don't want it to be, lifted from a screen cap of an episode. And I do have to give a quick shout out to my friend William Smith, who works on Star Trek Continues. He runs a website called TOS Graphics. I believe you might have to look up the exact URL, but TOS Graphics, and he has shared his research what he did on the show or on Star Trek Continues was he made replicas of all the display screens around the original series Enterprise Bridge, and the research he has put into this is astounding. He has replicated the timing of the blinks of each of the panels, and it's absurd how much time and energy he's gone into this. And I came across his website, which is basically just a forum where he's posted each of the screens he's replicated and how he made them, and the references he looked at. And and I asked him, if I could use his research. I went ahead and built my own, but I used the research that he did on the blinks and the timing and stuff like that, if I could use that in my game. And he was, very, graciously let me use them. And he's actually asked me to rebuild certain areas of the Enterprise for his, own just enjoyment. So it's really great to be, to work with somebody that, has done all this work for their purposes and for Star Trek Continues, and for him to allow me to use his research as well. And, without that, he saved me so much time. I could have done that research myself, but he saved me a lot of time and let me use his research. So got to give a shout out to William Smith. He's a great guy.
Absolutely. Phenomenal. That's really great. I'm glad that you brought that up. And, for once again, for the audience, to try to describe what this process is like. So when you work in a 3D space, you design, the basic models to fit the environment that you want to make. But then you also have to design the what they call the textures, which are the flat images that you map over top of these models. And to do both of those jobs, requires a lot of talent. Usually that's split up between multiple people. Certain people will do the models and certain people will do the textures, and they bring them together. And what they do is they render them into whatever scenes that they're trying to build, which is, you know, allowing the computer to create the take the two of those pieces together and create images or video or even an interactive space out of the two. So moving on from that and building on it a little bit, I noticed as I was looking through your screen grabs, there were some shots of things that I don't recall ever having seen on the original series, like shots of the ceilings and light fixtures in the ceilings. I was wondering to myself, how do you go about envisioning stuff that we may have not seen on the actual show?
Well, you know, I haven't done a lot of that, but I think actually the ceilings are a good example because you never saw the ceilings in the original series. And so I would use, there's actually a shot in The Enemy Within when they're on the engineering deck looking for Kirk's doppelganger, and they pan up and you can see, I might have to send this to you so you may be able to show it on the podcast sure. notes or whatever, but you see kind of a ceiling of the engineering bay, which I thought you never see it again in the whole show as far as I know. And I don't know if they had just constructed something real quick to put up there or what, because, you know, obviously in a state in the 1960s, you know, the stages didn't have ceilings. They just had spotlights and stuff like that. So I took what you can see in that picture and kind of extrapolated the design of the light fixture and then made that, you know, it's a little different, but it's definitely inspired by it. Made that as the individual light fixtures in the corridor. And you can see that on my Flickr page and my blog. It's kind of just taking cues from other sources. You know, I might, you know, there, I do have some areas planned that haven't been seen before, like for the original series Enterprise, I want to show the bowling alley. You know, I know there's a lot of debate. There's a lot of debate whether or not there really is a bowling alley, but there's a line in The Naked Time where Kevin Riley refers to the bowling alley.
Yeah.
And, you know, they didn't have a holodeck back then, so they would have to have some kind of, you know, recreation other than three-dimensional chess. But, you know, I want to show that. And, you know, I've kind of gotten an idea of what I want it to look like, and I want it to make it look like it is part of the Enterprise. You know, you don't want to do something so different that it looks like it's on another ship. So I've kind of, you know, got an idea. And actually, you know, there's an old game that was never released called Star Trek: The Secret of Vulcan Fury. And it was supposed to be awesome, but for whatever reason, it got canceled. It was kind of like an adventure type game, but it had some awesome, for back then, state-of-the-art 3D graphics. And they actually, if you look hard enough, you can find pictures of some of the stuff they were going to release, and they actually did a rendition of the bowling alley. So I will look for things like that and then take those into account and kind of use those as inspiration for whatever area I might come up with. Or I could, you know, stretch across series. You know, if they didn't have this room on the original Enterprise, then I could look at something they had in The Next Generation and just add TOS elements to it to make it look like it would belong on the original Enterprise. So it's a lot of just, you know, concepts. And, you know, I might make up my entirely own concept. There's a cargo bay concept I have for the original series Enterprise that I have fleshed out in a few different game engines. I don't think I have yet in the Unreal Engine. I don't think you can see it on my Flickr page, but it's got a very TOS feel to it. And, you know, that's just a result of me just sitting down with a old pen and paper and drawing a design out in a couple of different views and then fleshing it out in 3D. So it's just, you can pull inspiration from a lot of things.
That's awesome. You know, and I can't stress to the listeners out there enough that if you go, I'm going to have a link to Donnie's Flickr page in the show notes here, and please go and check out these still frame renders that he's put up there. And I'm telling you, it's an incredible amount of work, and they're very, very impressive. They look incredible. So the end goal of all this, I remember you saying, was some sort of a game, but at some point, are we as regular folks going to be able to download some interactive 3D walk-arounds that we can play with?
That is the goal. You know, I would love to eventually take what I'm building and turn it into a full-fledged first-person shooter or, you know, adventure-type game. But that's going to be work that I'm going to have to divide up between other people, and I'd have to build a team for that. So I don't set my goals too high and don't get overwhelmed with work. I know that, you know, I know it's completely possible within my own means to create an interactive walkthrough of the Enterprise. So that is the first goal in mind. If I meet that goal, then maybe I can take it further and make a whole game out of it. But hopefully within the next year and a half, I'll have something ready for release, or maybe I can maybe even release just a teaser, maybe just a walkthrough of the bridge or something like that before then, just to kind of whet everybody's appetite. But hopefully in the next year, year and a half, I'll have something ready for release and, you know, everybody can enjoy it.
Awesome. Well, we at the Tricorder Transmissions will be keeping track of Donnie's progress, and we'll keep all of our listeners posted on where he is. And when he posts updates to his blog or to his Flickr page, we'll definitely be relaying that on to you. And hopefully, Donnie, you'd be willing to come back on the show and update us on your progress.
Absolutely. And if anybody's listening, you know, if you want to get involved in making character models or weapon models or animating, or if you have any experience with gaming, building games, and you'd like to help out, you can reach me at my email address, which Jeff will provide.
Sure. Well, Donnie Versace, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to come on and talk about all this stuff with us. I really enjoyed having you on, and I'm looking forward to you coming back and talking with us more in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jeff.
So that was the awesome Mr. Donnie Versace, who will surely be back on the show very soon. And next up is Mike Rittenhouse from 5-Year Mission, and he is going to talk to us about their experiences at the convention as the house band and what we can expect from 5-Year Mission in the future. So I'm here with Mike Rittenhouse of 5-Year Mission. How's it going, Mike?
It's going good.
Awesome, man. Thanks for taking the time out to join me tonight. So we got to spend some time with you at the convention recently in Las Vegas. And, you know, you guys spend a lot of time on the main stage playing different celebrities in and out. Is there anything that stands out to you? Any special intros or outros?
Every one of them, honestly. Nice. It was awesome from beginning to end. But yeah, there were a few that were a little extra awesome. Like when we played Reading Rainbow for LeVar Burton, that was pretty cool. He stopped and listened and kind of danced to it a little bit and kind of got a kick out of our version of it. And that and getting to play Shatner on and off and getting to meet him backstage was definitely not just a highlight of the weekend, but just of our lives, honestly.
I saw on Facebook you guys posted a picture backstage with Shatner. You were all kind of huddled around him before he came out. What was that like?
It was awesome. The creation people asked us to come out into the hall out of our green room, and so we all came out there and lined up and waited a minute, and then he came down the hall and introduced himself, and we got to meet him, and they told him that we were the band. And probably the best part of the whole thing is that he was William Shatner, like the way he talked and his mannerisms, it was him. You know, it's not like he was like, you know, when you see people like acting on TV or in movies or whatever, you think of them as that they're acting, but like, he's just like that all the time. Like they said, Bill, this is the band. They're going to play you out. And he turns and he goes, "Oh, this is the band." And you know, it was just so hard to not to like smile really huge and laugh when he said that. You know, it was great. But yeah, you know, he introduced himself and he asked us what we were going to play. And we said, "Well, we're going to play Rocket Man." And his face went from a big smile to kind of a, "Oh, look." It was awesome. I mean, he was kind of messing with us. He was like, oh, well, yeah, I guess that's okay.
That's great.
I was just going to say he was much friendlier and nicer than I actually expected, because I've heard some horror stories of people who have met him. So, you know, it was a pleasant surprise that he was so friendly and outgoing. And we really enjoyed meeting him.
I'm so glad you guys got to meet him, because I remember you telling us earlier that you were going to, when you saw him, you were going to stop him, and nothing was going to get in the way of you taking a picture with him. I'm so glad to see that happened.
We have been near him 3 times now. Wow. And all the other times he exited the opposite way or whatever. Like, we didn't get to actually meet him. So we vowed that when we saw him in Vegas, we were going to make it happen. And luckily for us, Creation was on board with that.
Oh, that's great.
So they hooked it up for us.
That's great. And I noticed that this is something that didn't happen often, but I noticed that you guys, as the band, stayed on stage with Shatner throughout his entire panel.
Yes, that was really the only time throughout the weekend that we did that. Creation gave us the option to stay out there if it felt right or whatever, but most of the time, once we were done playing, it made sense to just leave the stage and let whoever was out there do their thing. And occasionally, they would call on us for something. Like, for example, when the ladies of TNG were out there, Gates McFadden looked back for the band because she wanted to do – like, when they came out, she was kind of dancing a little bit, and she, like, said she wanted to dance a little more. And we had already exited the stage, so she was, like, completely disappointed. And actually, Andy had stepped outside – so he wasn't even standing there. And so I ran out and jumped behind the drums and gave her like a little drum beat to dance to. And, wow. And that was kind of a fun little, highlight for me. But yeah, aside from a couple things like that, we really didn't stay on stage throughout the weekend. But when we met Shatner, he asked us, he said, are you guys going to stay out there while I'm out there? And we said, well, we can. And then he said, well, why don't you? Why don't you stay out there? And if I need you guys to play something, I'll call on you.
Huh, that's awesome.
And we were like, okay. So we stood there the entire time for his entire Q&A, and not once did he ever need us for anything. But it was just, not only was it really cool to be able to stay out there, but it was an honor to be on stage with him and to be able to stand there ready to back him up at any moment. But yeah, he never actually called upon us to play anything, but it was cool anyway.
We were in the audience watching that panel, and we noticed that all of you guys throughout that entire panel had huge, giant smiles on your faces as you watch Shatner talk, and he's such an engaging speaker. It must have been incredible to be standing, you know, a few feet away from him on a stage like that.
Yeah, it really was. And I mean, we've been that close to him before, but this was kind of different, you know, because we were on stage with him rather than beside the stage, and you know, we were there at his request rather than just there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you know, we were pretty giddy about it. But another thing is after the first day, Creation mentioned to us that some of their staff noticed that when we were out there waiting to play, and people were and like someone was out there finishing their Q&A. That we looked bored.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah. So, well, you know, we thought no one's paying attention to us. Who cares what we look like? But yeah, apparently, you know, we would go out and like a couple minutes before they would be done, and we were waiting, and I guess we just kind of looked like we were bored and waiting. So they told us to make sure we don't look like that. So after that, we made sure that whenever we were out there, we were paying attention to the person talking, not only paying attention, but actually showing it on our faces. Probably half of us being out there with Shatner was just awe and admiration, but the other half was probably us making sure that we didn't look bored.
Well, speaking of special moments on the main stage, I know you mentioned playing Reading Rainbow for LeVar Burton, but I know you also played a Sisters of Mercy track for Simon Pegg, and you also did a little Mr. Roboto when Brent Spiner was out. What was the thinking? Were those pre-planned moments for you, or was that kind of a spontaneous thing?
No, most of that stuff was pre-planned. We did a lot of preparation leading up to the convention, where we knew a lot of the people that we were going to be playing on and off the stage. So we prepared certain songs, like for Brent Spiner, we prepared Mr. Roboto about a week before the convention. They sent us a revised list and a schedule, and suddenly everything was turned around and certain people were not on the main stage anymore, and they were going to be in a secondary room. And so several of the songs that we learned or were working on, we ended up having to just drop because, you know, we weren't actually playing for those people anymore. So it was kind of a little bit of a pain at the last minute, and we had to come up with a few things really quick that we hadn't planned on. So, you know, it all worked out in the end because everything kind of, you know, everybody seemed to enjoy everything that we did. But yeah, most of those kinds of songs were definitely planned. Like, and actually a few of them were last minute, like literally as we were walking out to play for people, like, RoboCop.
Oh, Peter Weller.
Peter Weller. That's his name. I don't know why I can remember his name. Anyway, when Peter Weller was out there, you know, as we were coming out to play him off, we were like, let's play Mr. Roboto again, you know, and because it totally works for him. And, you know, we were pretty excited about that. And then like literally like 30 seconds before he was getting ready to say goodbye and walk off, we came up with the idea to make it Dr. Roboto. And so we were like, oh, let's make it Dr. Roboto. And so, you know, like I leaned over to Noah and I'm like, make sure you say Dr. Roboto, and, you know, and like Andy's counting us off. Like, you know, it was like that short of a notice. So like a lot of the time throughout the weekend, it was like that where, you know, we would come up with stuff right before we went out because creation threw a few curveballs at us where we weren't expecting certain people to be there or someone canceled or whatever. And we had to change stuff really quick, but yeah, it was fun coming up with all of this stuff ahead of time. And we had a lot of things that we had worked on. Like John DeLancey was supposed to be there and he canceled. Yeah. And we had learned the My Little Pony theme for him. And then Don Stark was supposed to be on the main stage, but then they moved him to another stage. So we had learned that 70s show song.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, just stuff like that where we had worked on these songs, but we didn't really get to do them because things changed.
Yeah. So, well, you know, you guys were playing a song here and then a song there in the main stage. But there was a late night party on Saturday night, which was, I guess, billed as a dessert and cocktail party that we were fortunate enough to be brought into by you guys. And that was a real 5-year mission show, and you know, you get an actual set list, and you guys played a full about an hour or a little bit more than that. And there was some really cool stuff that went on during the show, but at the very beginning, and we talked to Donnie Versage earlier, and Donnie had been brought in to your stage show at the beginning to kind of pull off a little bit of a gag, and we heard about his perspective of it earlier. But how did that thing come about from a band perspective?
Well, we were just hanging out at the convention, and in between playing people on and off and during panels, we would have a few minutes to go out and explore. And one of the times when we were out checking on our booth and checking on Savannah, who was awesome. She spent the whole weekend at our booth.
She
and,
was.
I mean, we owe her big time because it was just nonstop, and she was there all day, every day for us because we couldn't be there.
And how many triples did she knit while she was there?
I don't know. I know she ran out of yarn at one point, and I think, was it you guys who got her some more yarn?
Yeah, we did.
That was awesome. Yeah, because I know once she runs out, she probably was getting pretty bored. But anyway, at one point when we were checking on the booth, I thought Andy walked past me, and I looked, and then I go, whoa, you know, because I noticed it wasn't him.
Yeah.
And I tapped on Noah's shoulder, and I was like, check it out, Andy's doppelganger. And it was Donnie. And, you know, that was the first time we had ever – I mean, we'd never seen him before or anything. You know, he just caught my eye. And then I saw him again like two or three times throughout the day. And at one point I said, we need to use him for something, because between his red uniform, his glasses, his hair, he looks like Andy. You know, we need to like take a photo or do something with him that's fun. And so the other guys thought that was a great idea. But you know, the day had gone past and we kind of, it was like, it was nighttime, you know, it was the end of the day, and we were getting ready to, head back to our rooms and then go hang out. And I saw him one more time walking, and I was like, let's get him, you know. So, we chase him down into I think he was walking into Quarks or something, and suddenly this whole group of people run in and surround him, and he takes this stance, like, "What do you want?"
He's being accosted.
And, yeah, like I swear he probably thought we were crazy throughout the whole weekend. Every time I saw him, he just kind of like looked at me and then like turned and walked the other way. Like, I swear he probably is terrified of us. But anyway, we explained to him our idea, and he thought it was a funny idea, and you know, he seemed to be on board. And so that night at the show, all the way up until right before it was time for us to come out, and we weren't really sure if he was really going to show up or not. Like, maybe he was just humoring us, you know? But then he did, he showed up and just like came backstage and started hanging out with us. And, he was really cool about everything. And so we came up with a plan for what he could do, for us. Which was, we all walk out on stage, and he walks out as if he's Andy and gets behind the drums, and we start talking to the audience and setting up the show like we always do. You know, we don't draw any extra attention to the fact that that's not Andy back there. And then we go to start the first song, and he starts counting it off, like a drummer would. You know, he's like, one, two, and then he fakes like some kind of heart attack or something and falls off the drum. And then we're like, oh no, what are we going to do? I guess we're going to need another drummer. And then Andy comes walking out.
Very Spinal Tap-esque.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very Spinal Tap. And I think Donnie ended up like just rolling under the curtain or something.
Yeah.
I was hoping to talk to Donnie tonight, because I wondered like what he thought of all that, if he was just like rolling his eyes at it, or if it was like the greatest moment of his life. I don't know. I really have no idea.
Well, I did get a chance to talk to him earlier, and he very much enjoyed the experience, and we kind of talked through a little bit of it from his perspective, and he was kind of flattered. I mean, he was traveling by himself, so when he was accosted by you guys, he was a little bit of a defensive posture. But I think that that was one of the highlights of the convention for him, was being able to come up there and run that gag with you guys.
Well, that's good. I was hoping that we didn't eat up too much of his convention time, especially after looking at his Facebook and kind of going back and looking at his experience at the convention, I saw that he was actually very busy at the convention. I mean, he got a lot of photo ops and went to a lot of events and things. So I'm glad that he took a little bit of time to entertain us and be a part of our show. And, I wanted to let him know that we really appreciated it and that, he's really cool. So,
yeah, he's a great guy. And I had a great time talking to him, and I'm sure we can get you guys on an episode together in the near future. So the dessert party itself, and you did a, I guess, is that a typical set for you? How do you guys go about building a set list for a show?
We have currently written over 48 songs in the band. I mean, we've done 48 episodes, and with the Tribbles EP, I mean, that puts us up into 54 songs, I think, that we have total. So we have a lot of songs to choose from, and it actually gets kind of hard sometimes because you don't want to let certain songs or episodes kind of be forgotten. But we do have a handful of songs that we just about always do because we know them really well. They seem to be fan favorites. So we kind of work around those. So usually for a set as long as we played, we'll have 6 or 8 songs that we pretty much always do. And then we'll kind of dig into the rest of our catalog and pick a few that might be fun to do that we haven't done in a while. So that's typically how we do it. However, when we have a lot of shows back to back, but not in the same place, we kind of will stick with one set list so that it's easy. If we have a show this week and then another one next week in a different town, we'll just do the same set list because it's we don't have to do a lot of practicing. We're kind of lazy like that.
Well, there were a few songs that you guys did at the end that weren't on the official set list, and some of the special ones that you put together for certain celebrities, right?
Yeah, we did take that opportunity to play some of the ones that we had learned. We did that 70s show and My Little Pony, and we did Reading Rainbow again because it was such a big hit when we did it. And we thought we should do it again.
And did you do George Takei? You did George Takei during that set, right?
We did do George Takei, though that one was on our list. we do that one most of the time because it's a short song and catchy and technically it is our biggest hit because it has over 80,000 views on YouTube. Wow. So we do tend to throw it into almost every set.
To kind of bring us around and wrap it up, do you have any favorite fan interactions or favorite moments in general from your time at the con?
It was all awesome. It's been over a week now, and I'm still processing everything that happened. I mean, it was just nonstop fun from the moment we got there. I mean, meeting a bunch of new people is always cool. Being that close to all of the stars is definitely a highlight for us. I mean, just being backstage and seeing the stars kind of come in getting ready and just talking to them. I thought one of the best things was talking to them backstage like normal people, rather than waiting in line for an hour and then going up and saying, "I love that thing that you did." And then that was it. That's your whole interaction. We actually stood back there and talked about the weather and stuff like that, actually a lot of the time they would be playfully dissing whoever was out on stage. I'm not going to name any names or anything because, I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but sure. They tend to pick on each other playfully, not being mean, but it was just kind of fun to be a part of that. And experience them being a little more human rather than bigger than life.
Well, that's awesome. I really envy you guys for being able to interact with all of them that way. And I can, you know, Craig is not here with us right now, but I can definitely speak for him when I say it was incredible, you know, meeting you guys, getting to spend so much time with you at the convention. And we really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to come on and talk to me tonight about your experiences at the convention. And I hope that you guys will be coming back on our show on a regular basis.
Oh yeah. You guys are awesome. And we were glad to meet you, not only on the first time we were on the podcast, but also in person in Vegas. It was great. You know, you're our friends now, so you're going to have a hard time getting rid of us.
Well, I don't think we would want to get rid of you at this point, Mike. You know, it's been awesome to be able to meet you guys, and we're looking forward to our future shows with you. And I know you guys are doing Gen Con this week, right?
Yes. Gen Con, we're playing a few shows for Gen Con. They're having us back to play the opening ceremony like they did last year.
Cool.
And then we also have a concert on Saturday.
Oh, very cool. And any hints as to when we can expect a new recording from you guys?
We're a little behind schedule because of mainly because of Vegas, but also because of a few of the other things that have come up throughout the summer. It's been very busy for us, so probably spring is when we're looking at the next release, which will be the Spock's Brain EP.
Oh, very cool. We're looking forward to that, and hopefully you guys are going to want to come on and be part of our Spock's Brain extravaganza that we're planning in the near future.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Just let us know when you want to do it, and we'll be there.
All right. Well, Mike Rittenhouse, thank you so much for coming on tonight and talking to us, and we will talk to you again very soon.
All right.
So that about wraps up our coverage of the 2014 Las Vegas Star Trek Convention. Craig, you have anything else you want to add before we close up?
Yeah, and I want to say that the coolest thing about this is we just did a two-part wrap-up of what our experience was at the convention. And all we can really do is present what we experienced. And we probably missed a ton of stuff that other people experienced. And we're sorry if we didn't give you a clear picture of what the convention covered from day one to the last day, but I hope you enjoyed sort of following us along on what we did while we were there. And I think that's really the coolest thing about the convention is you look at the breakdown of the schedule, and there's two independent theaters. There's the main theater and then the secondary theater, and no two experiences at that convention are going to be the same.
Yeah, exactly. There's so much content to take in at that convention that you literally could go every year and get new experiences every year. And you know, we talked about that we were going to go this year and then we were not going to go back again until the 50th anniversary, which is 2016.
Yeah.
But I know as we were leaving, you turned to me and said, you know, maybe we'll just go for a couple of days next year.
Yeah, yeah, I think we could slip in, you know, fly in Friday night, do Saturday, Sunday, come home Monday.
Yeah, I think we could, or as the year drags on, I think that we may decide that we want to do the entire thing. I can see it happening.
Me too. I can only imagine sitting at home the week that's going on and just wondering what is going on in Vegas at that exact moment.
Especially because we've met so many great, great people.
Yeah.
And I hesitate to name them all because I know I'm going to miss some.
Yeah.
But we've met so many great people that I can't wait to see some of these people again. I mean, just the names like David Gerald, Mark Cushman, George Pappy, the 5-Year Mission guys, Donnie Versica, Larry Nemechek, April and Vernon. I mean, so many people just come to mind that I can't wait to get back there and see them again. And it's been very difficult for me to adjust to regular life again.
Well, you know, it's funny. I know we talked about this probably at the airport, getting ready to get back on the plane on Monday morning. But I said, it's going to really be hard for me to get out of Star Trek mode and into other modes for these other podcasts that we do.
I know. I'm thinking of that today as I was walking over to get a coffee at work this morning, and I've got to walk about a 10 to 12 minute walk to the cafeteria. And I'm thinking to myself while I'm by myself, like, we have two other podcasts to do that are completely unrelated to Star Trek, and I can't get my mind on them.
It's been a long and difficult process to slowly wean myself off of Star Trek, or at least off it enough to focus on other things. But, you know, it's good to still sort of bask in the wonderful, you know, memories of what we experienced over those 5 days. So we really hope you enjoyed listening to our rundown of what went on at the Star Trek convention in Vegas for us. And if you were there and had an experience you want to share with us, hit us up on Twitter at either TTT_pod or on Facebook at the Facebook group, which is facebook.com/the Tricorder Transmissions, or even on thetricordertransmissions.com, where, Jeff, we recently added a new feature to the website.
We did. And I'm going to give a nod to Mr. Mike Rittenhouse from the 5-Year Mission for lighting a fire under my butt. This is something I've been meaning to do for a long, long time, and we've now added a discussion forum directly on the tricordertransmissions.com. And not only have we added a forum, which you can access by clicking the forums link on the left-hand menu of our website, now when you visit the website and you look at specific episodes, you will see on the episode page an embedded forum about that episode that you can directly respond and read the other responses on that page without leaving it. So now we have a fully integrated discussion forum. So you don't have to have a Facebook account. You don't have to have a Twitter account to interact with us. You can interact with us right on our own website.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to being able to talk to all of you guys directly. And by the way, it is also mobile friendly. So if you're on a smartphone or a tablet device, the forum will be very easy to use. It's tailored especially for small and middle-sized screens so that you'll be able to talk to us from anywhere, from any device you want.
Excellent. Excellent. Very cool. And we want to thank you also for letting us cover the convention and taking a break from our standard format.
Yes.
But we thought this was something that would be really interesting for us to do, but would also be of great interest to our listeners who maybe weren't able to make it out there as well.
Yeah, I agree. And hopefully during our double episode coverage, we've covered enough of the original series content from the convention to satisfy our listener base out there. I know we tried to attend and talk to as many original series people as we could and report back on that stuff for all of you guys out there.
Yeah, yeah. So we will be back next Sunday with a fresh, brand new episode commentary.
Yes, it will be our episode 52 of the Tricorder Transmissions. I believe that's the Omega Glory.
All right.
All right, so thank you all for listening, and we hope that you've enjoyed these episodes, and we look forward to talking to you on a wide variety of mediums at this point. All right, take it easy, everybody, and thanks for coming along on the Vegas ride with us.